Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Every touchdown.
Is he in? He's in! Touchdown, Atlanta!
Slam dunk.
Bang!
Shot on goal.
Shot from distance. Score!
Home run.
It is gone!
All season, hear it here.
Even on the weekends.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
You know, I'm going to be really excited tonight to be, you know, back here in studio to be able to go with my daughter Danny over to see the Five Stripes tonight. Atlanta United, New York City Football Club, NYCFC, 7:30 right here on Sports Radio 92.9. The game pregame begins at 6:30. Mike Connie and Jason Longshore on the call from Mercedes-Benz Stadium. One win in five games. Be nice if we could get three out of this one for Atlanta United tonight. Now we'll be thrilled to be back there to see the Five Stripes in action at Mercedes-Benz tonight. So I'm really, really looking forward to that. Of course, we have the Braves again tonight. Sweet 16 as well, with two games, 6:09, Texas Tech at Florida, 8:49, Alabama and Duke. Both of those games can be heard live on the radio on our sister station, 1380 News and Talk, WAOK. Braves at 7:15 tonight. Now, first two couple of games here. And, of course, 0-2, as we all know. And I got a couple of tweets that I'm going to read to you in a few minutes here in regards to a tweet that I put up, replies to a tweet I put out about the bolt, okay? Because I expressed a lot of reservation in the offseason in saying, look, I believe this is a World Series team. I think 1-9 when healthy, and of course they're not healthy yet because they don't have Murphy and they don't have Acuna in the order. But 1-9 when healthy is a team that is as lethal a lineup as there is in the game. And I think we've seen that even in San Diego in the first two games. They're barreling the ball. They can hit. We all know they can hit. And we all know they can hit as much as anybody. They may lead the majors in home runs again. They can flat rake. And their rotation, and Schwellenbach is going to get a start tonight. When Strider gets back, 1-4, and again healthy, with Sale and Lopez and Schwellenbach and Strider, that's as good a four as anybody else has got. But that bullpen, they can't even get to Iglesias. And that bullpen was the area of concern of mine. And I said it many times. I said my biggest concern is that A.J. Minter is gone. Not Max Fried, A.J. Minter. Because that bullpen, I went, So the other day, on Wednesday night, I had a chance to do something I don't think I've ever done in an interview before, 24 solid minutes of an interview, straight through with the GM of the Braves, Alex Anthopoulos, on Wednesday night. And we talked about everything in the team. And one of the things I brought up was the bullpen. And I expressed a serious reservation about the fact that I wasn't sure. Do you know who's going to be the night shift? Who's 7, 8, 9? Because I don't. I don't have any idea who's going to be 7, 8, 9. How's this? We got, is Grant Holmes going to be? I don't have any idea how this is going to work out. You signed Kimbrel. You signed Jesse Chavez. Is this just, you know, what's going on in this bullpen? And here is how Alex responded to that.
No, I think that's very fair. And look, that we knew once you last year was Joe Jimenez's A.J. Minter at the start of the year, lockdown, guys you felt very good about. Pierce Johnson coming off his 23 season. You felt very, very good about the depth there. Now, look, we thought we had our bullpen was still strong at the end of the year. We lost A.J. Minter for essentially the month of August, September, and into October. So we had lost him for the last third, and we still felt we had a good bullpen because Dylan Lee and Aaron Bummer did a nice job from the left side. So we need guys like Daysbill Hernandez. You know, Pierce Johnson didn't throw as well at the end of the year. We think he's back to throwing like he did early and like he did in 23. So if Pierce can now be back to who he was, Daysbill Hernandez did a nice job as well. Neris, with his experience, he saved a lot of games for the Cubs, pitched well for the Astros. Angel De Los Santos has a fantastic arm. But look, there's definitely an element of unknown there. There's volatility there. You know, I've asked Snit the same question you did. How you feeling? We have a 3-1 lead and starter goes 5 or 6, especially early. You know, starters aren't going that deep. They're going to monitor the pitch count and so on. How are we lining up 6, 7, 8, 9? And you know, he's going to go with what he feels like. But he also understands it might take a little bit of time to feel out how it's going to go. And you don't want to use the word experiment, like you said, or audition and so on. But you know, he's had to adjust over time. Last year, Daysville Hernandez worked his way into getting late-inning opportunities. And, you know, I remember that game against the Marlins. Season's on the line. Every game counted. Bases loaded. He brought him in, and there was a lot of other guys in the bullpen, and he believed in him. So he's made adjustments on the fly in the past. We wouldn't have thought Ramon Laureano would be a starting outfielder for us, and he was. He beat out Kelnick, beat out Adam Duvall. He was playing the best. So I do think you're going to see guys like Dylan Lee late in the game. I think Pierce Johnson late in the game. I don't want to speak for Snit. I think after that, whether it's De Los Santos, Neris, Daysville Hernandez, Bummer, I think it'll depend on how some of the scouting reports are. Guys susceptible to velocity or to off-speed or left-handed sink and things like that. But he'll find his way through it. Hopefully these guys get the job done for him. And we've got a chance to have a strong pen, but we don't necessarily have the certainty that we thought we had in years past.
But that big but from Alex Anthopoulos, certainty that we had in the years past. Mention Neris. Neris has an ERA of infinity. That's his ERA. It's infinity right now because not an out in that first game. And so far, the bullpen has been what's lost them the two games. They're barreling the ball. Starting pitch has been okay. But the bullpen has not been able to hold the games. So I mentioned that. And then two guys that comment quite often and are fans, and they're both right. But I just want to address this. Yo and Travis, they responded on my ex. Yo said, John, it's only the second game. Travis said the same thing. He said, in NFL terms, the Braves are 1/11th into week one. And then Travis went on and said, being reactionary is counterproductive. I don't know. I don't think being reactionary is necessarily counterproductive. This is the only thing I would take issue with. First off, I'm a talk show host. Being reactionary is what I do. That's what we do. I mean, it's our job. What's your job? To be reactionary to what's going on. If we don't react to what's going on, like in, you know, somebody sweeting out from a Chipotle, you know, I mean, then what do we got? Well, let's talk about the potential of golf in the future. Well, of course we are. We're reactionary. And we're going to react to the first two games. And I know it's only been two games, Joe. And I know Travis has only been 1/11th into week one. But from the jump, the concern I had at the beginning of the year that the bullpen, as Alex Anthopoulos basically said, no certainty, was going to be the issue, it reared its ugly head two games in. Now, it got 160 to go. They can fix this. Does Kimbrel have anything left? Does Jesse Chavez have anything left? You know, Alex Anthopoulos, at one point, this is the genius of Anthopoulos. He has had to reimagine entire areas of a team at the trade deadline. We all recall that he reimagined an outfield by making three moves at the deadline with Soler and Jock and Rosario, and boom, what did those three do? He also reimagined an entire bullpen with three moves at the trade deadline, right? And so that was the whole Will Smith-Martin thing, right? And so he had to reimagine it again. My only question is, in being reactionary, is do you have to start thinking about the terms of the bullpen and reimagining it, like, now? Because the early returns are not good. And you can't even get to Iglesias right now. I know it's only been two games, but we're about to... The one thing you don't want to do on this first seven-game trip here in San Diego and Los Angeles is come home 1-6. You know, you don't want to put yourself in a box by wasting a whole trip out west. You want to get something out of it. I mean, at this point, you're going, well, 2-5 wouldn't be a bad trip. Oh, okay. I was kind of hoping for more than that, but beyond that, with the team, the hole that exists in that bullpen is apparent because there is no 6-7-8. There's a 9 guy, haven't seen him, haven't been able to get to him. Who's 6, who's 7, who's 8? And that's why we talked about it. Again, you heard Alex Anthopoulos said, because I said, are you going to be, you know, auditioning people? Well, we don't want to be auditioning people. But that's exactly what you're doing. You're auditioning people for it, and so far Neris did not. His audition didn't go so well. You know what I mean? I mean, you really need to kind of lock this down because you could be good in every other area. But if you can't hold a lead, Noel, You ain't going very far.
Yeah, because it was disappointing to be 3-3 yesterday going into the eighth inning and feeling like you had a shot to go take that game and be 1-1, and then all of a sudden one immediately goes out the ballpark. Immediately. And it's like, well, now you have one inning to try to tie this game up to stay in it, or you're down 0-2. And,
or forget about what happened in the first game, which you should have won, too.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So to see those two things very early in the season, because everything else is like what you want to see, right? And then you get to that spot at the 6-7-8, and it's like, are we gonna survive it? And it's not a good feeling to be in early in the season. I will agree with you there, John.
I mean, I'm not saying they can't fix it. Of course they can.
Of
and
course.
You know, I mean, you know, Dave Bell Hernandez may turn out to get red hot, and who knows, Neris may suddenly become unhittable and things of that nature. And it is Brian Snicker to say, yeah, it's only two games, and you know, he'll come around. You know, I mean, he'll be fine. He'll come around. I mean, you know, and of course they're going to give it some time, but. We all understand, too, that the Braves are in the most competitive division in all of baseball.
Yep.
Okay? You can make an argument, the top four teams in baseball are all in the National League.
Yeah.
And by the way, three of those four happen to be in the NL East.
I mean, ESPN Plus just put out an article yesterday talking about scouts and managers deem the Braves the number one team to knock off the Dodgers. So that's a lot to come into the season with to not see what you really want to see the first two games. But like Snick said, it is only two games, but we all know what we want ahead of us, so it's a little dicey.
Yeah, it's just...
Makes you a little nervous.
And Travis is writing in his tweet back to me, you know, meaning by being reactionary. Well, yeah, I mean, of course I'm reactionary because it's confirmation bias is what it is. It's two games of confirmation bias, and my bias is that the bullpen isn't settled. Unless you think it is, and... Maybe you think it is, and I'm missing it, because I didn't think it was settled, which is why I asked the general manager, and he sort of agreed, it's not settled. So if the general manager is telling you, yeah, it's really not settled, and I'm going, yeah, that's what I think too, and then they go out in the two games, and they can't, they're blowing holds and blowing, well, saves in the case of the first game. You know, I mean, yeah, that's not good. And so, again, it's only two. I understand. It's a long season. I get that. No, ask, explain to me that it's a long season. And by the end of the year, it just, I guess it goes to say that I'm not sold that the guys that they have, and it's great that Kimbrel's back again and Jesse Chavez might be back for the 19th time, whatever. You know, I mean, it's fun to have those guys back, but boy, you're going to have to make some serious adjustments out there in the pen and really kind of define what the roles are. And up until you define what the roles are, I'm probably going to be reactionary and unsettled about the Braves pen. I'm just telling you that right now. Until those roles are defined, until I know for a fact who is going to be 7, 8, 9, and that if we get to a lead, okay, that's going to be, you know, even if it's guys that are on the team, you know, and you say, okay, we have decided that it's going to be these three guys, and then they excel in their roles, that's great, you know. Here comes your 7th inning guy, and it's Pierce Johnson. Here comes your 8th inning guy, you know, and it's, I don't know, pick a guy. Dave Bell, and here comes your 9th inning guy, and it's Iglesias. Fine. All right, I'm good with that. And then Bummer's going to be your 6th inning guy, and we're going to go righty-lefty with somebody else, and maybe Grant Holmes goes out there and helps out in the bullpen. All right, fine. Oh, it's all good. But right now, it just seems as though we're like, hey, let's give that guy a try, and let's give that guy a try, and oh, hey, listen, let's just audition every, which is exactly where I don't really want to be. I know it's only two games. It's just a little uncomfortable, that's all. We'll see what happens tonight. And but if we're back on the radio tomorrow and the same thing happens, I can't guarantee you, Travis, that I'm not going to be not reactionary. Just saying. That's all. Because it is in our nature to be reactionary. All right, speaking of reactionary, we had some reaction to the Sweet 16. The SEC has been, they've been doing it. We could have SEC Final Four. It could happen. Now, what's going to happen tonight and tomorrow in the Elite Eight that could tell us if the SEC is going to own San Antonio? Well, our college basketball expert, Deshaun Tate, was on with us earlier in the program. And when we get back in a moment, he's going to break down the Elite Eight, tell you who he thinks is going to win these games. He's got one or two that I went, oh, really? You're picking that team? You'll see if you agree with him. We'll do that as we continue here from the Kia Studios today, live at Colony Square. John Fricke on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Every touchdown.
Is he in? He's in! Touchdown Atlanta!
Slam dunk.
Bang!
Shot on goal.
Shot from distance. Score!
Home run.
It is gone!
all season. Hear it here.
Even on the weekends.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Saturday afternoon, live on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Big day ahead. Chris Thomas takes you 2 to 5. Turtle will be here. And then Dylan jumps in, a little afternoon hometown take from 5 to 6:30. Coverage of Atlanta United and NYCFC begins at 6:30 tonight. Mike Conney, Jason Longshore on the call from Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I am really looking forward to being with my daughter Danny at the game. And matter of fact, we'll be out probably down the stadium in about an hour. She's got to do her little bit of work for the Home Depot backyard down there. So I'll be excited to go see the Five Stripes play tonight. And the NCAA tournament tonight, you can find it on our sister station, 1380 News and Talk, WAOK. It could be that with four of the eight teams being from the SEC and all four of those SEC teams are in different regions, they could be an all-SEC Final Four. We had a chance to break down the Elite Eight with our college basketball expert, DeShawn Tate. And this is what he said about the games today and tomorrow. NCAA tournament, Elite Eight, the forgotten, you know, hey, it's the, you know, first four, it's the field of 64, it's the Sweet 16, it's the Final Four. Nobody ever says Elite Eight. they just don't. I don't know why. It just gets kind of lost. But the Elite Eight. And that's what we have today and tomorrow. And our college basketball expert, DeShawn Tate, at Tate's Take Hoops, with us on the WayForward.com hotline. All right, DeShawn, eight teams remain. Four will go to San Antonio. Let's talk a little bit about how we stand with these eight. Let's begin with the game in San Francisco, 6:09 our time, tip-off tonight. It is all chalk, 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, 1-3. In the 1-3 game is the first game up. Texas Tech is a 3 seed, which has beaten a 14 in UNC Wilmington, an 11 in Drake, and a 10 in Arkansas, has yet to face a single-digit seed, and all they get is Florida. How do you see this game going tonight between the Red Raiders and the Gators?
Yeah, I like the Gators in this one. I just think it's probably going to be a little bit too much. We started talking before about the experienced guard play that they have, obviously, with Will Clayton and Richard. I think that the experience that Elijah Martin brings over from Florida Atlantic is something that, you know, is not only beneficial, but something that's, you know, critical, being able to prepare the guys and, you know, be able to speak on from that standpoint as to what it's like to be able to play at this time of year. And so I think maybe the X factor there could potentially be Alex Condon, the big man in the middle for the Gators. But if there is a team that is playing with house money, they're feeling no pressure. People are forgetting that they're even in the tournament, the most probably least talked about team remaining in the tournament. It is Texas Tech, and what JT Toppin has been for this team all year long, not just in this tournament, I think has been huge. Ultimately, you know, I am a believer that Darion Williams is one that has to step up and be really clutch for the Red Raiders on this one. They're going to be defensive minded, and it's really, really tough to get them to play outside of their brand of basketball. They win and lose that way. I think it will be close. It will be very close, but I think I'm going to go with the Florida Gators on this one.
Yeah, when Toppin came over from New Mexico, he really kind of reset the whole Texas Tech trajectory for the year, and he is, as you say, going to have to be large. Then everybody kind of going, okay, that's the appetizer. And then we get to the 8:49 game in Newark tonight between Alabama and Duke, which, honestly, you could make a case in a way, Sean, that there is no matchup in the Elite Eight, the Final Four, or even the national title game that might be more intriguing than Alabama against Duke.
This is basically a national championship, you know, type caliber game right here within itself in that late game. I'll say this much. You know, I know that Duke is a lot of people's favorites to even cut down the nets outside of Florida. And Alabama's got this really tough team. I don't think that they'll shoot it the same way. I'm going to roll with Duke on this one. I think it's still going to be really, really tough. I think the outlier here, or the elephant in the room, if you will, that sticks out like a sore thumb, is the fact that sometimes Alabama goes on these stints where they're just not defensively disciplined enough sometimes to my liking. And I don't think that that's something that is bodes well for a team like Alabama, because Duke is so balanced between his offense and defense now. here's the difference sometimes in many situations like this. No, it shouldn't surprise anybody if Alabama walks away winning this game, is because also this time of the year is really about the experience. They have that. So many players coming back from last year's Final Four team. Duke is primarily predicated based off of its freshmen. We haven't seen such things happen where they go on to win national championships since Duke did it 10 years ago. I do like Duke here, but this will be their toughest test. Everybody's going to get a tough test. Number one seeds and what have you. Houston had theirs yesterday. Duke will have theirs today, but I like them to win.
All right, Deshaun, this just over here for a second on Cooper Flagg. Obviously going to be the number one pick in the NBA draft. Do you when you watch his game, he's a freshman, as he grows into his body, do you see NBA star or do you see NBA superstar? Or do you, you know, it's, I know it's hard to project sometimes because there's a fine line between just being a really, really good all-star player and being a true superstar of the game. Does he strike you as being a superstar or just a star?
I see a star. I think on the surface level, I think one thing bare minimum that you have to say is really good NBA player. I think he checks that box first. If his career panned out to be like another former number one pick, similar to being like an Andrew Wiggins, is that too much? I don't think so. I think that that's something that's fair. There's been comparisons to, you know, a couple different players, Gordon Hayward being another one, Andre Kirilenko being another one. So I think for a guy like an Andrew Wiggins, who's certainly not a superstar, but worthy of being called a star or a number two option on an NBA team, I think something like that is fair and similar to what I see in Cooper Flagg at the next level. But I do want to challenge people first, John, to embrace and enjoy what you see him here on this level before we go to that level.
Sunday at 2:20 in Indianapolis, Tennessee and Houston, another game worthy of being a kind of a national title game in some respects here. I'm still questioning the Cougars a little bit because I'm not sure they have the punch to win it all. And if they don't have the punch to win it all, this is like the worst matchup they could get.
Yeah, Houston turns you over so well. I think that that's one of the concerning things sometimes, especially why, you know, Zakai Ziegler, the point guard over at Tennessee, why something like that is so critical. And honestly, believe it or not, Houston's one of the better three-point shooting teams in the country. And so, you know, I do like Houston in this game. Tennessee sometimes can be kind of a hard sell for me on a pick. But listen, I mean, they played in the toughest conference in the country this year. At some point, you keep knocking on that door, you're going to break through. Rick Barnes has been to the Final Four before, so I do believe that they have more than a puncher's chance to be able to knock down on Houston. But that's going to be a lot easier said than done. I like Houston on this one, but, man, is Tennessee good and also playing some of its best brand of basketball this time of year.
And then the final Four team will come from State Farm Arena, 5:05 tip tomorrow between Michigan State and Auburn. And I in my bracket, I took Auburn. I only do one. It's a family bracket is what we call it. And I took Auburn to win it all based on the simple assumption that I said, in a one-on-one matchup with anybody in the tournament, does Auburn win the game? And I said, yes, I'll take Auburn to win the game, you know, head-to-head against anybody here. The Spartans are going to have their hands full. I mean, they just
– oh,
Auburn,
yeah.
Auburn just comes at you, not only Broome, but they just come at you in waves. And – one of the things I think more so maybe than any other team, including Alabama, including Duke, when Auburn gets rolling downhill, you're not stopping them.
Yeah. Yeah, they're a different level even in terms of size with not just Broome, but with Cardwell as well. And how about, you know, the guy that's right here in our own backyard came from Parkview High School with Kelly that they have as well. And Chad Baker-Mazar is one of the better defenders in college basketball. I like Sparty on this one, and I'll tell you why. Outside of the fact that Michigan State is a team that typically plays better as an underdog than they do a favorite a lot of times. We talked about how they haven't played their best brand of basketball in the tournament yet. That's still left to be seen. And it's hurtful to the fact that, you know, they're one of the worst three-point shooting teams in college basketball this year. Auburn's playing at home, you know, basically, and they're all, it feels like their own backyard if you were watching that game on yesterday. But Auburn gets off to some slower starts, and so Michigan State does too. So it kind of appears as if it will be a more of a, you know, muck it up grinder, maybe some miscues and unforced errors and turnovers in the first half. That's what I would expect. But if Michigan State is going to have a chance at this game, it has to have not only that underdog approach to it where they play their best brand, but even more so when those shots are not falling for either team, they have to be coming long off of that rim where those quicker guards can kind of get to them and get out on the break, as Michigan State is one of the better teams in the country in terms of pace. So it wouldn't surprise me either way, whichever team ended up winning. Michigan State is just one of those teams that typically, you know, does Michigan State type things this time of the year. And I want to throw one more thing out there at you. Forgive me for getting long with it. How about this for a stat for you, John? In comparison to this year to the 2019 year, you have a generational player on Duke's side, obviously with Zion Williamson and Cooper Flagg. You also have a Michigan State team who beat Richard Pitino in the second round of the tournament. Right, this year, New Mexico, last time in 2019 was Minnesota. You also have a Texas Tech team who was also a 3 seed at that time, obviously went to the Final Four national championship game. And in both of those years, what they have in common is Kansas was the number one team in the country in the preseason coming into the year and lost in the first weekend. So I don't know what any of that means or what it has to do with, but I just thought that was really ironic that things have just kind of panned out that way. And in the event that Michigan State wins this game, all those things will hold true to go on to the Final Four, making Tom Izzo's ninth.
Well, for 14 teams and, you know, records that are being set by the SEC in this tournament, one of the interesting things of the four teams, half the Elite Eight is SEC, Deshaun, Auburn, Florida, Tennessee, Alabama. That would be the matchups in the Final Four if all four should win, because all four are in different regions, which is interesting. And they are the four big teams as well. There are no upsets coming out of the SEC. Those are the four top teams. And they have all matriculated to this point here. And it's up to the SEC to now really stand and deliver over the next couple of days to get to San Antonio. And because if they do that, if they get two or three or, God forbid, four, but if they get three of the Final Four, then all this, you know, chatter about the SEC underperforming, that'll be a lot of shut-me-up juice. But they've got to perform now. So that, I think the onus and the pressure is on the SEC to deliver today and tomorrow.
Yeah, I know it can be probably taken as that way. I mean, the SEC has already been successful enough getting, you know, half of the Elite Eight teams into the Elite Eight and having its chance. I mean, do I think that there will be four teams representing the SEC in the Final Four? No, I don't. Is it possible? Of course. But something else that we haven't seen, with the exception of one time in 2008, could happen as well, where there's all number one seeds that end up advancing to the Final Four, which we know how rare that is, too. So those are two things that I don't expect will happen. But I know that, you know, everybody has a tough game in front of them. The SEC being a tough conference, all that stuff makes a difference to a degree. You know, in terms of advancing on, because you prepare for these type of moments by playing the toughest games and so forth. But, you know, try telling that to Michigan State, Texas Tech, you know, Duke or Houston. They're sure that they're not, you know, hearing any of that and going to be looking to send the SEC home, you know, before we get to San Antonio.
All right, I didn't look this up before the interview, and I probably should have. I'm certain that no one conference has sent four teams to the Final Four. But I'm pretty sure, too, off the top of my head, that I've seen three from one conference on a couple of occasions, once from the Big East, pretty sure it was like Georgetown, Villanova, St. John's kind of thing, once from the Big Eight when they had like Kansas and Oklahoma, and maybe Kansas State, I don't remember.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, wow. I think once from the Big Eight had three teams in the Final Four, because they had the national title game, too. It was like, you know, Oklahoma and somebody in Kansas, I forget. I'm pretty sure, Deshaun, without looking it up, nobody's ever sent four. So, I mean, the SEC has a chance to make To make serious history. Yeah.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. No, they do. And talk about what that would be even, you know, to just this market and this region, the Southeast region, and all the talk that you get about football and this and that. And while that's definitely great, to be able to say that you're doing that on the basketball court as well with the great coaches that they brought in, I think that this has been a great example as to why we see some of the SEC success, some of the NIL deals and, you know, guys transfer portal. I mean, who doesn't want to come to the Southeast region where the weather is typically great? And I mean, all these things, a lot of these kids now in these AAU programs, it's not really so much about being loyal to the programs and the prestige and all that kind of stuff anymore. It's about the coaches and the loyalty to the coaches, and where the coaches go is where these reasons that these players tend to sign with these schools. And because they've done such a great job over the years of being able to add some great, great coaches to the conference, I think is why we're seeing them be so successful right now.
So Garrett Chapman looked it up. Big East, 1985, Georgetown, Villanova, St. John's. I was right 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. And just because I remember it, Villanova ended up winning the title that year, and Villanova was the number 8 seed. It is also the Villanova, the 8 is the lowest seed ever to win the title.
Rolly Massimino, is that correct?
Yep, correct.
Wow, wow, how about that?
Yeah, how about
wow,
that?
That's awesome.
Yeah. Enjoy the games, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow. I want to get your kind of instant react tomorrow to what you
we'll
see.
Will do.
Tonight.
Can't wait. Looking forward to it. Right. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate
take
it.
Take hoops.
There you go. A little tongue twister.
Right,
have a good one.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Every touchdown.
Is he in? He's in! Touchdown, Atlanta!
Slam dunk.
Bang!
Shot on goal.
Shot from distance. Score!
Home run.
It is gone!
All season. Hear it here.
Even on the weekends.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Well, it has been great to be back in studio again for the first time in a year and a half. It's so weird when you haven't been somewhere in a year and a half and you roll back in. You know, the thing is that it's like, okay, I never left because I'm so used to, you know, Noel, I sat in this seat for so many years. Now, granted, most of the time that I sat in the seat, it was dark out because the sun hadn't come up. There are times you and I would do shows, and it'd be like, we're in our last hour. Oh, there's the sun. Sitting there in the dark, in the old dark in the morning, you know, for all those years. And, you know, to be back here is such a great thrill, and I'm really looking forward to going tonight to Mercedes-Benz Stadium and seeing, you know, Atlanta United play. But it's great to be back. It's great to see you. It was great to see Garrett. It's great to see I see Turtle out there getting ready for his show and to see all the people. I hope I get to see everybody when I'm down here this weekend. You know, it'd be a lot of fun for me anyway. And my thanks to Deshaun Tate and to Garrett Chapman and to Noel White and to all of you that called in. Again, I got to say, it's, you know, going to be a busy weekend. We got Elite Eight tonight. We got the Final Four coming up next, you know, next week in San Antonio. And these games, you know, everybody wants chalk. You know, we want Cinderella. Pardon me. We want Cinderella, and they complain about it. But then when you get chalk, and both the men's and women's tournaments are both chalk, a couple of things about it is that you got to get used to chalk because nobody complains about chalk when it comes, interestingly enough, to football, because all football is chalk. There's no real Cinderella. I mean, at the moment, there is. I guess Boise State would have been a Cinderella, right? But for the most part, it's just chalk. I mean, they're the top 10 or 11 teams in the nation, 12 teams, 13 teams, whatever, you know. I mean, and so this is the way basketball is going to go, too, because once we do get Super Conference, and we will get Super Conference, then those other conferences are going to be playing in a different tournament. They're going to be playing in a tournament that is not the NCAA tournament, because the Super Conferences are just going to have their own tournament. And so just this is getting used to it. And everybody wants to complain about chalk until you go, boy, isn't Alabama Duke going to be fun? Now, Deshaun Tate likes Michigan State tonight, and I wish all of you that are down here from the great state of Michigan, you know, I wish you have, you know, enjoy your time here. But you're going to be tough. I ain't going to lie to you, okay? You saw what Auburn did to Michigan. I ain't going to lie to you. It's going to be tough. Auburn's really, really good. And I'm just going to guess that the crowd will be slightly pro-Auburn tonight. Just slightly pro-Auburn. Yeah, you might be outnumbered like 3-1. It's going to be a very loud, because Auburn, after, but Auburn's in Alabama. No, they live here. They live here. If you're in Vermont, they live here, okay? And so it'll be a lot of fun at State Farm Arena, and it's going to be fun, of course, at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And a lot of people are going to be down there and milling around tonight, so do know that. There's going to be a lot of people in and around the whole area. So enjoy the game coming up with Michigan State and Auburn tomorrow and then the Atlanta United game tonight. So should be fun down there. I will say as well, I'm going to be really curious as to see what happens moving forward with Kirk Cousins. All right, so it's guest time. We talked so much about it today, I'm going to ask Noel to guess. Noel, you got to get on the mic and guess. All right? You ready?
All right.
All right, will Kirk Cousins be traded prior to the draft or no?
Yes.
I think so, too. I think he'll break.
Yeah. He wants out really bad. We keep getting these stunts, and it's almost like he's holding up free me signs like he's a hostage. I think he figures out this thing with the Browns. I think the Browns go ahead and realize they're going to have to give up a pick, and I think he gets out of here before the draft.
Yeah, I do too. Because, look, he has to know the Falcons are not messing around. This is, the dude with the blackboard, the whiteboard, and on the, the meme that goes around X, okay, the find out dude, okay? And Kirk Cousins isn't about to want to find out. Because what he's going to find out is he's not only going to be the backup all year, he might be third string. I mean, can you imagine I can almost imagine a scenario where the Falcons would be so petty that, Noel, that let's say just we'll go on the positive side of things. They get to week 18, whoever the hell they're playing, and they've already locked up a playoff spot and they cannot improve their position.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, so Michael Penix isn't going to play. I'm telling you, it's going to be like the Josh Dobbs or whoever the hell the
dude. Yeah.
That ain't going to be you, Kirk. Oh,
nope.
Kirk's like, I'm going to play. No, you're not playing. No, you're not seeing the field.
Nope. You're either going to be a pickup order for DoorDash in Cleveland, or you're going to be Clipboard Kirk.
Yep.
And right now, you got to decide which nickname you want. Because I'm making up Clipboard Kirk gear as we speak. So if it heads that direction, so we can have some fun with it. If it heads that direction, if not, then he'll be a Uber Eats order sent up to Cleveland. And either way, but I'd rather him just going up to Cleveland.
Right. I think that he has to know this, that the Falcons are not farting around. How about that? We'll say fart around, and he doesn't want to find out.
Not at all.
I think, again, they made it clear twice, which is why I'm just floored by the national media that not being able to see this.
Well, I think that, the idea, cutting the player has been seen as the overall solution for so long that it just seemed crazy that the actual answer is for him to sit on the bench. Like, I think that's the part that people can't grasp. Like, it actually does make sense for the organization for him to hold the clipboard. This is one of the times, maybe the first time, that it actually does make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, no, you can make sense out of that. I agree. I don't think it's a perfect outcome for anybody, but you can make sense out of it.
Right.
And
it's like where they are now, this is how you salvage it.
Right. When the national media had that reaction, the visceral reaction to the Falcons paying the $10 million roster bonus, I didn't see that coming.
How not?
How not?
$100 million guaranteed flat, period. Like, that was the money.
They were never cutting him.
They were never cutting him.
They were never going to do the Russ Wilson cut him. And let's say, Arthur Blake's like, I'm not paying him to play somewhere else. I'm not doing that.
Nope.
That's what he wants me to do. He wants me to make him a free agent and to pay his salary. That's how Kirk Cousins sticks it to me.
He wants it all brand new socks and drawers.
Right.
Man, you're not about to get it here.
No, he's not getting that. I made that clear to him. So he can get another $10 million to sit over there on the bench if need be. And if Kirk is going to Cleveland and meeting with Jimmy Haslam and Kevin Stefanski, and if Kirk's there, he's trying to negotiate a deal, right? Right? But Ian Rappaport is going to say it wasn't NFL-related.
Right. He's clearly trying to get on their radar and send a message at the same time.
Right, of course. Of course it was NFL related. Let's say that at the very least, for whatever reason, Mike McCartney, the agent, said, okay, we can't really talk to Cleveland right now. We can't get in front of them. But we can make a show of it. Why don't we fly to Cleveland? We'll go to like a Chipotle and a barbecue joint. We'll take pictures. You can respond to it. And we'll show them you're in town, which is a way of saying, one of the things that I always tell young, aspiring, and this really works for any of you in any profession, in any walk of life, okay? But I just usually talk to people that are aspiring to be in the media, all right? Is that if you want a job, you have to be present. Anybody can send an email. Anybody can send a CV. Anybody can send a tape. You can apply for jobs. But if you really want a job, you take that tape, you take that email, you take that CV, and you walk into the door and you hand it to the secretary and ask if the hiring manager or the program director or the boss happens to be there. And even if that person isn't there, you might get lucky. You might get an audience. And even if that person isn't there, the person who's at the reception is going to take that and say, oh, this came in from you. That person showed up here. There's initiative. It's about being present. If you can go be present, if you want to work, you either pick a city that you want to work and live in, or you pick a profession, okay? So if you pick a profession and you say, I want to work in this profession, and you want to work in a hospital or something, or you want to work in what you do is you don't just send out, everybody gets too lazy nowadays. They just send out CVs. They send out resumes. They send out emails. I mean, it's good to follow up on that. But I encourage you, if you're 20-something and getting out of college and you want to work in an industry, that you get a whole bunch, like 15, 20 of your best CVs that you can get, or your resumes is what I refer to them as, and you get your butt in a car and you drive all over High Haven and walk in the door and walk up and say, is the hiring manager or the boss in? Here, I'd like to talk to him. Because that's going to get the attention of people, okay? You actually made the effort to go there. So let's say he couldn't even talk to the Browns. He made the effort to go there. He's sending a clear signal. He wants to talk to the Browns, right? And the agent didn't say no. The agent just said, I can't believe how much tweet about Chipotle blew up my phone. Well, of course you can. You knew exactly what was going to happen. Just fascinating stuff. All right, I'll talk to you again 11 to 1 tomorrow, short show tomorrow. And I'll be at Atlanta United tonight. So if you see, I'm going to be wearing my Falcons red gear here that I tweeted out, so you'll see that. Hopefully I'll see you at the game, and enjoy. Chris Thomas is next to take you to 5 o'clock right here on a busy Saturday on Sports Radio 92 on the game.